Running a business is no cakewalk, but with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is experience. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com. Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Now, your ideas don't have to wait. Now, they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business, and evolving your passions. They push what technology can do, so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to Now.
There's a lot happening these days, but I have just the thing to get you up to speed on what matters without taking too much of your time. The 7 from the Washington Post is a podcast that gives you the 7 most important and interesting stories, and we always try to save room for something fun. You get it all in about 7 minutes or less. I'm Hannah Jewell. I'll get you caught up with the 7 every weekday. So follow the 7 right now.
Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Get in touch with technology with Tech Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello again, everyone. Welcome to Tech Stuff. My name is Chris Paulette, and I am an editor at HowStuffWorks.com. Sitting across from me, as always, is senior writer Jonathan Strickland.
The game is afoot.
Okay, this episode is about a system created by IBM as a scientific experiment to determine whether a computer can beat a human in a game of skill and intelligence.
Do-do-do-t.
Jonathan.
What is Watson?
That is correct.
Yay! I liked about a vowel.
I would, too.
And I
but
no
I can't
whammies.
Afford a vowel.
No whammies.
Big bucks.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Are you a giant computer? Sorry, I was really reaching back
for
that one.
Now I would like to tell you my sob story about my life so I can win a new refrigerator. There, that's reaching back, and it's really obscure. If you know what I'm referring to with that particular game show, let me know.
Sadly, I do, so yeah. I'm just going to stay out of this. Okay. I'm not eligible to win. I read the rules.
Right. So we're going to talk today about the Watson computer. We actually had a lot of listeners write in about this because the announcement of the Watson computer came shortly after our episode on actually, I think it might have even been just before our episode about computers versus humans published. So, of course, it looked like we had a glaring omission.
Yes.
But in our defense, we didn't know about it yet.
Yes, actually, we mentioned one of Watson's cousins, if you could call it that. Predecessors is probably a predecessor of processors.
Yes.
Big Blue?
Yeah, actually, Deep Blue.
I'm sorry. Deep Blue.
Deep Blue.
Big Blue would be the company that made it.
Right.
Hello.
But we're talking about IBM, and IBM does this thing occasionally where they issue...
Thing.
Yeah, well, it is a thing. I mean, it's because it's not just Deep Blue, it's not just Watson. They issue what they call grand challenges
yes.
to their engineering teams.
Yes, they've had a series of these.
Right.
And some of them are more noticeable to the public, I guess, than others?
Deep Blue would definitely be one of those because that made headlines in the 90s. Deep Blue was, of course, the computer that challenged Garry Kasparov, the chess grandmaster, to a series of games. In the first series of games, Kasparov was emerged victorious, and in the second, Deep Blue won. And so that was one of those things that kind of propelled the whole idea of computers being able to outwit humans, to be able to outperform humans in certain tasks.
Mm-hmm.
But there were other tasks that humans were still much, much more capable of completing than computers.
Mm-hmm.
And as it turns out, Watson is a grand challenge to answer one of those, so to speak. Or maybe question one of those would be better, because you have to put it in the form of a question, right?
That's correct. I would imagine that Watson does this flawlessly, but we could talk about the differences in a human opponent and a computer opponent in a little bit.
Sure.
I wanted to get into some of the details. Watson is not actually a single computer as I typically think about it. It is made of 10 racks of IBM Power 750 servers using the Linux operating system.
How many cores does it have?
2,880 processor cores.
Holy free holies. And you thought your quad-core processor was the bee's knees.
I also thought my my computer's 4 gigabytes of RAM were pretty much good for what I'm doing, but Watson has 15 terabytes of RAM.
Yeah, a terabyte is 1,024 gigabytes.
That's right. Also, it computes at the rate of 80 teraflops, which is 80 trillion calculations per second.
Right.
And in fact, I understand from reading IBM's website about Watson that it has somewhere in the neighborhood of 2 million books. Essentially, I mean, it's kind of hard to say how much information is in a book, but more or less 2 million books, and it can scan the entirety of information on all of those hard drives in that machine in roughly 2 to 3 seconds.
Right. The idea here is that they needed to create a computer. The whole challenge here was to create a computer that could compete in a game of Jeopardy.
Yes.
And compete on a championship level.
Yeah, and as a matter of fact, when we talked about the computer versus person challenge in that podcast, we were discussing how, you know, computers do some things really, really well, and some things they don't do so well. And IBM freely admitted that this was a real toughie.
Yeah, because as it turns out, one of the things computers do really well, they do well with things like logical problems.
Uh-huh.
You know, because you follow a very set series of steps, things that obey specific rules.
Mm-hmm.
The English language does not obey rules as strictly as, say, mathematical formula.
Yes. As a matter of fact, we sort of go with things that might be tricky for computers to understand all the time, because we constantly on this show do wordplay and puns.
Right.
And computers may not necessarily understand the nuances of such things or slang.
Or metaphors. There's a lot of elements to human speech that we naturally understand as we develop our language skills, right?
Speak for yourself. I have no idea how this thing works.
Okay. But most of us figure out how to determine what someone is talking about based on contextual clues and our knowledge of things like wordplay and metaphors.
Right.
So as we build our vocabulary, as we build our ability to create sentences, as we understand concepts that are not necessarily concrete, then we are able to communicate in a more ambiguous way than a computer would necessarily be capable of on, you know, any normal computer, that is.
So what are you trying to say, Jonathan? Get to the point.
Yeah, what I'm trying to say is that depending on the way you word a sentence, a human might be able to determine immediately what the significance is of the sentence, you know, what you just said. They'd be able to understand it. A computer, depending upon the wording, may not be able to interpret it properly because, you know, you didn't necessarily say, like, the ball is blue.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you might have used a much more poetic way of saying it that a computer just can't, you know, the computer can't equate that as being the ball is blue, but any human listener would be able to understand what you were getting at and say, oh, it's a blue ball. Mm-hmm. It was just a really fancy, flowery way of saying that.
Yes. I watched a number of videos on the IBM site, and some of them are quite amusing, actually. because the early versions of Watson just didn't get it.
Yeah, they weren't the most accurate.
And what's funny about it is not that the computer didn't get it, but the looks on the engineers' faces as they were going, yeah, okay, no, maybe not so much. We have to go back to the drawing board.
Yeah, there are some great examples.
But Dr. Chris Welty was saying the point of this exercise is to do the science behind this. And they specifically were looking forward to the challenge of Jeopardy. And, you know, if you're unfamiliar with the show, which some of you may be, a lot of the questions, of course, the answers are presented first. The contestants are given the opportunity to choose one of six categories that are on the board at different values, monetary values.
Right.
And so you can expect in these categories that the answers, you are actually supposed to give the question if you are a contestant on the game. The answers can fall within a certain domain of knowledge. For example, the infamous potent potables category is about alcoholic drinks.
Right.
And you can expect that if you are fairly knowledgeable about different kinds of drinks that you might do well or poorly in that category. So you should either choose questions or answers from the category or not. Well, you know, if no one has bothered to program that information into Watson, then Watson will do poorly in that category. But some of the categories on Jeopardy are written with a lot of wordsmithing involved. So you might have to supply an answer that rhymes or unscramble the letters to do to form another word. Now, the unscrambling thing might come very easy to a computer. But the rhyming answer, you'd have to go over a lot of synonyms in your head to try to find, okay, well, I know the answer to this question, but it obviously isn't going to rhyme.
Right.
So Dr. Welty said, you know, this is one of the things that we were really looking forward to. We wanted a challenge. We wanted the computer to be able to answer questions or question answers that a computer normally wouldn't be able to. So they were really looking forward to cracking this nut, so to speak.
Yeah. They talked about there being five major areas that they had to concentrate on in order to make Watson work. Based upon the way Jeopardy works.
Uh-huh.
Because, again, they designed this project with a very specific application in mind. It helped give them direction as opposed to it just being, I just want to make a computer that is able to analyze semantics and respond.
Right.
That's a much more general approach. By giving them the fact that, okay, well, our goal is to be able to create a computer that can compete and potentially beat champions in Jeopardy, it provided more focus. So with Jeopardy in mind, they said the five things they needed to concentrate on was that Jeopardy creates a broad and open domain,
mm-hmm.
which means that you don't just get questions about one subject.
Yes, you're not going to have to know everything there is to know about alcoholic drinks, and that's the only thing you're going to be asked about.
Right. There might be politics, pop culture, sports, literature, all sorts of categories that you could potentially come up against. So mm-hmm. with that in mind, the computer had to be able to answer those things. There were, as Chris was saying, there was an element of complex language.
Mm-hmm.
Jeopardy answers can be tricky. They're not necessarily straightforward. It's kind of like the New York Times crossword puzzle.
Yes.
If you read the clues to that crossword puzzle, they aren't necessarily straightforward. They require you to make some, you have to bridge some gaps in order to get to the right answer.
Yes. And in fact, they will ask you, even in clues for that puzzle, they will ask you for things in poetic language, and you'll have to think about things in a completely different way than you might have otherwise.
Right. The next area that they had to focus on was high precision. So you had to be able to narrow down your choices and find out which of your potential answers would be the most, most accurate or the best one to choose. Along with that was accurate confidence, which means that the computer itself has to be able to determine how likely is this answer, how likely is this the right answer?
Yes.
Right? And then the last one was high speed. It had to be a really, really fast computer in order to compete against people, because if you know something, you just spout it out, right? You buzz in, you say, who is Marshall Brain? You know, and then you've got the answer.
Who is Marshall Brain?
I think only one person can answer that question.
That's true.
He is not in the studio today. but yeah, you have to have computers capable of of accessing all this information and picking it out as quickly as a human would be able to.
Right.
In fact, I saw in one of these videos that if you had a 2.6 gigahertz core processor, mm-hmm. a computer running one of those, okay?
Remarkably, so, I do own a computer with a 2.6 gigahertz processor.
Right. So, you know, kind of a middle-of-the-road computer right now.
And yeah, it's pretty typical.
But 2.6 gigahertz computer, if you were to try and answer one question, mm-hmm. And you were going to go through all of Watson's data in order to find that the answer to that question and compare all the answers and come up with the best result and then present it, mm-hmm. it would take you 2 hours.
Yeah.
For that one computer.
That doesn't surprise me much.
So that's why you have that 2,880 processor, you know, with all the different the web servers running. You have to have those core processors running so that you can solve these questions in parallel. Mm-hmm. Excuse me. And you probably remember us talking about parallel computing in other podcasts. Mm-hmm. That's the idea that you try and solve a problem by working on parts of the problem all at the same time. In this case, Watson gets the answer from Jeopardy and then goes through and tries to process all the potential questions that would be the correct response to that answer. Mm-hmm. And then it has to evaluate them and choose the right one and has to do this in just a couple seconds.
Right.
It's a pretty cool idea. The challenges are not trivial.
No.
Just the answers are, but not the challenges. And like you were saying, the early tests were very amusing because Watson just didn't get it. It would give answers that were obviously related to the question, or at least related to words that were within the question, but were not the right answer. It's kind of like if you were ever using a search engine and you put in certain terms and the results you're getting back are related to the terms you put in, but not to the subject matter you wanted, mm-hmm. because it's maybe using homonyms or it's using synonyms or maybe you misspelled something or whatever. But anyway, you're getting the wrong kind of responses. Mm-hmm. Same sort of thing.
Yep. And speaking of trivial, I did want to point out, too, that Dr. Kelly, Dr. John E. Kelly III, he is a senior vice president of IBM and the director of IBM Research. The project itself, you know, yes, they are building a computer to win a trivia contest.
Right.
So that might seem
trivial.
Yes. However, the point is, you know, Dr. Kelly was saying, look, the amount of information that is being created today is rapidly overcoming our ability to identify it, process it, make sense of it, and derive knowledge from it.
Yeah, in fact, I think he said 15 petabytes of data, raw data, get generated every day. Not just from people, but from machines as well. But that's an insane amount of information.
Yes, yes. Now, I mean, the human mind is a remarkable thing, and if you have systems in place, you can help manage that. But at some point, you know, even people can't keep up with that, even with our remarkable computing machines in our skulls. So the idea is to build a tool that can actually help people, that will be a tool for people to help people make sense of this vast amount of information. And, and to overcome that and get real help, I guess, from machines and help people understand or navigate the world of information that is rapidly created. One of the cooler videos on the site, I think, was the one where they were explaining, look, there's always been this interconnected system of information going on all over the world, but we didn't really understand it nearly as well until the internet came around and we could mm-hmm. actually see what was going on, you know, in seconds rather than, you know, having it take hours or days or weeks or months or even years in many, many years past. And it's just enabled this and is accelerating the problem. So the challenge of creating the computer to play the game, well, this is basically, I guess, an exercise to see, can we really do this? Can we create a reasonably intelligent computer that can help us, you know, figure out what's going on and where the answers are to our questions.
Yeah, can we create a computer that can understand natural language?
Yeah.
So that
is challenging.
Right. It's not that you have to tailor your language to the computer so that it understands. I mean, we're familiar with that. Mm-hmm. You know, we talked about Boolean logic before.
Yes.
About how if you want to do really effective search terms, you need to understand how Boolean logic works so that you can, because search engines don't understand natural language.
Mm-hmm.
They'll do their best to try and match your query with the right result, but they don't understand it. They aren't able to analyze the information.
Yeah.
One of the concepts that was really important with Watson is one that's going to be very important if we ever are to have a semantic web, mm-hmm. which is the idea that you could talk to your computer, whether you're actually speaking or typing or whatever. You can communicate with your computer in a natural way,
mm-hmm.
and the computer will be able to understand, at least on some level. It may not be a deep level, but it'll be able to interpret what you're saying and give you the right result in response.
That's right. It depends on a system of contexts.
Yes.
And without those contexts, and a computer has to be able to interpret that well, it's not nearly as effective as it could be.
Right.
So this is definitely a step in the right direction.
Yeah, I think it's pretty fascinating the way it talked about how, or the way the engineers talked about how the computer comes up with its answers.
Mm-hmm.
So what it does is it comes up with candidate answers.
Uh-huh.
This is part of that parallel processing where all the potential answers to a question pop up. And then it turns each of those answers into a hypothesis.
Mm-hmm.
And then examines each hypothesis to determine how likely that hypothesis is in fact the right answer. And if it doesn't meet a certain level of confidence, then Watson won't buzz in. So Watson's not going to buzz in on every question, because occasionally there's going to be a question that's going to be worded in such a way that Watson is not really able to interpret what the answer is, or just doesn't have the information in his database. That's another thing we should point out. Watson is completely self-contained.
Yes, it is not hooked up to the internet. So lest you think it is searching on Google, it is not.
Right. So all the information that Watson has available to it is self-contained. It cannot get more information during the course of a game. Now, in between games, folks at IBM would update Watson, especially with things like pop culture references, so that Watson would be able to interpret questions that revolved around pop culture and be able to respond to them. Or news items, things that had just happened in the news, they'd have to update Watson with that information as well. But yeah, the key was to be able to let Watson break down a sentence and really understand what the sentence was saying, not just, you know, this must be the object and this is the subject and this is the verb,
mm-hmm.
but to really understand what it was saying, because context, as you were pointing out, is so important. One of the elements that they talked about was temporal reasoning.
Ah.
Temporal reasoning meaning that there are different ways of saying the same thing.
Yes.
For instance, I could say that I graduated 20 years ago.
Yes.
Or I could say I graduated in 1991. Or I could say the 20th high school reunion is coming up for me. All of those things essentially give you the same information. By the way, I did not graduate in 1991. But all those phrases give you the same information that in 1991 I graduated high school. But it's different ways of saying it. And a computer does not necessarily know that each of those different sentences means the same thing. So they had to find a way for Watson to learn that, there are many different ways of conveying the same information using totally different sentences.
Mm-hmm. And you'll actually be able to see that on February 14th, if you tune in to watch the show. That's when it's scheduled to air here in the United States.
We know that it performed pretty well already, at least.
I was going to get into that.
Okay. Sorry.
No, I just figured after we, you know, we could talk about the actual show that's coming up.
And sure,
I think actually the show itself, this particular episode is going to be interesting, but I was going to mention that in a minute. Sorry.
Okay.
Basically, one of the things that I think is really kind of cool,
mm-hmm.
you're not going to be just sitting there watching a box and two human opponents.
Right.
They actually made an interface for people to watch, which I think was probably key for Jeopardy.
Yeah.
Because I imagine they would actually want to see. It's like, well, how do we know what it's doing? It could be brewing coffee for all we know.
Right. Mr. Coffee.
It has an avatar. And you'll see it looks kind of like a planet with little, thought wigglies. What do you call those illustrated?
I'd call that Doug's hair.
Yeah. Basically, if the computer is feeling, I put this in quotes, if you don't mind, confident, the avatar that you see is green. So it has, it's feeling pretty sure that it's got an answer it can use to buzz in.
Right.
However, if it doesn't have the correct answer, it will be orange. So you will be able to see what's going on, and you will also be able to see it thinking, because as the algorithms are processing information to try to find a correct question, it's so weird to say in this context, the avatar is going to flicker. So you will actually be able to see it in the process of trying to determine an answer for itself. Now, in 2007, they started building Watson, which, by the way, we didn't mention, I don't think... this is named after IBM's founder, Thomas J. Watson, not after the Sir Arthur Conan Doyle character.
Right. He's not a doctor who served in India.
they actually started working on this problem or project in 2007 and didn't really have a candidate until that they were ready to share with the Jeopardy producers until late 2009. Now, one of the videos or a couple of the videos that I saw on the website interviewed one of the producers of Jeopardy.
Mm-hmm.
And I had his name, Harry Friedman, executive producer. And he said basically, you know, we were interested in it, but we didn't want it to come off as some kind of stunt.
Right.
And I understand that. The Jeopardy has sort of a cachet as being it's a trivia show, but these people are seriously intelligent.
Right.
And they have a lot of domain, you know, cross-domain knowledge.
Celebrity Jeopardy accepted, of course.
We won't go there. actually, some of them are
Trebek.
Anyway. But that's always entertaining too. There's an element of entertainment, but they also have a certain cachet.
Yes,
I mean, it's like, yeah, we have seriously smart people on this show. We don't want it to devolve and cheapen the show. So they showed it to the producers in late 2009, and they have video of the producers watching Watson perform in a contest with some IBM employees, and they seemed pretty impressed. Obviously, they're impressed enough to actually go forward with the show.
Right.
Now, to recruit, they recruited two of the very best Jeopardy champions for a show. You probably have heard of both of them. One is Ken Jennings, who won 74 games in a row a few years ago, won $2.4 million on the show. And Brad Rutter, who is the all-time money champion, who won $3,255,102. And they stand to win $1 million. Whomever takes home first place will take home $1 million. Second place is good for $300,000. And third is $200,000. Now, the human contestants have agreed to donate half of that to charity. And IBM will donate all of its prize winnings to charity, no matter what place it comes in.
Yeah, that's pretty phenomenal when you consider how much time and effort and money must have been put into this project.
Yes. Now, as Jonathan said, these three have already gone at it for a prep round.
Right.
And Watson did pretty well.
Yeah. Actually, it was doing really, really well in the first half of the game.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
It ended up winning.
Yeah.
Actually, they asked Brad Rutter. I read an article in Wired magazine by Sam Gustin, who was writing, who talked to Brad Rutter and said, he said, "Are you scared to be going up against this computer?" Or nervous? He said, and this is a quote: "Not nervous, but I will be when Watson's progeny comes back from the future to kill me."
Yeah.
End quote.
Yeah, there's been a lot of Skynet jokes about this.
Yeah,
and HAL jokes as well.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, that's one of the other things that's really cool about Watson is that, you know, I mentioned a little bit that it kind of thinks being
in quotes.
Yeah, take it in context, folks. No, that Watson looks for answers the same way we do, in that it has all this information that's been stored in its database, but it's all been stored like in the form of books and plays and poems and things like that, right?
Yes.
So it's not organizing all its information in tables, which is typically how you would do that in a database.
Right.
You know, it's actually searching through contextually, which to me is phenomenal. That's one of the reasons why, but it's also one of the reasons why it does so well, because it's not looking for specific patterns. It's looking through the actual information.
Mm-hmm.
And it was no small feat to design this computer.
No.
They had several teams working at IBM. Actually, I've written down the different teams here. They had, they had an algorithms team mm-hmm. that had 15 people on it. By the way, some of these teams had had shared members, like there'd be someone who'd be on more than one team. So in total, it was around 25 people who worked on this project.
Yeah.
But 15 of them were working on algorithms, and these were the ones that would identify the context created by the question and look for the available sources for answers. There was a strategy team, and the strategy team actually was in charge of designing Watson's gameplay and betting strategies.
Well, that's important. That's again, if you haven't watched the show, you know, as you go on, you either make money when you answer questions correctly, get nothing if you don't answer at all,
or and, you lose money. If you
lose money if you don't. And at the final round, there are two rounds of regular questioning, and once that's done, there's what they call Final Jeopardy, which is a last question on which you are shown the category. So you have the domain from which this question is being pulled, but you don't know what the answer will be for you to come up with a question. So you have to bet based on what the other two contestants have on their boards.
Right.
Versus what you have earned over the course of the game.
So,
and if they both have $15 each, then and you have $10,000, then you don't have to worry about your betting strategy. But
right.
if you're neck and neck, you have to figure out, well, do I know enough to answer this question or question this answer? See,
right.
It really is throwing me this.
Or do I wager that they don't know what it is, and therefore I keep my bet small, hoping mm-hmm. that they're going to bet big and lose enough money so that I win anyway.
Right.
Or am I in the lead? Am I in the lead enough where I can bet a smaller amount just so that in case either of them double up, they still don't overtake me?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's a lot of betting strategy involved. Or you could Cliff Clavin it. And just bet the whole thing, even though you are hopelessly in the lead. I mean, there's like no way you could lose. You bet the whole thing and then you lose. Who are seven people who have never been in my kitchen? the strategy team, they were in charge of the gameplay and betting strategies. Then you had the systems team. They were the ones who helped design the way that Watson would interpret a question across thousands of different cores,
mm-hmm.
you know. So then you've got the speech team. So that's the team that actually worked on its text-to-speech capability so that Watson talks to in the game. You don't just see words appear on the screen. Watson actually has a voice.
Mm-hmm.
He does not always pronounce everything correctly, but they worked very hard to try and give him a pretty wide range of pronunciations because Jeopardy tends to use lots of fancy words.
Yes.
There was an annotations team, which built the taxonomy for the search databases.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting to all our librarians out there.
Yes.
Taxonomies are important. I mean, that's how you find information. And, of course, you have to design it in such a way so that the computer can hit the most likely sources first.
Mm-hmm.
So it can come up with the answer as quickly as possible. There were also teams in China, Tokyo, and Haifa. There was a project management team, which was sort of the liaison between Jeopardy and IBM.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was an applications team, and that's the one that I think is really the most interesting moving forward. No matter whether Watson wins on the 14th or not, the applications team, that's the group that's looking at ways to use this kind of capability beyond the Jeopardy scenario.
Mm-hmm.
So some of the examples I heard were included, like the one that they spent the most time on was a diagnostics, like mm-hmm. medical diagnoses.
Really?
Yeah. The idea being that you could input your doctors could use this when seeing patients who are giving, you know, interesting symptoms, something that maybe was contradictory, and you would use a computer that could essentially reference the world's information on medical knowledge
mm-hmm.
and come up with the most likely of diagnoses, which is pretty interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But I've also seen other potential uses. Government and law were two that were mentioned as well, which mm-hmm. is kind of interesting, where, you know, you start looking for a precedent maybe for a law case or something along those lines.
Absolutely.
So, there's definitely uses for this beyond just hitting that daily double.
Mm-hmm. That's true. That's true. You know, I was just thinking about it, too. I was reversing in my head the betting strategy, because when you mentioned whether Watson wins or not, I started thinking, what if you're Brad Rutter or Ken Jennings and you're trying to devise a betting strategy and you're like, well, I know he's going to do this because I've seen him. I mean, both of these guys have played Jeopardy enough times where the other one probably knows how they're going to bet. But how do you devise a betting strategy against a computer?
Especially a computer that seems to jump all over the board. Did you watch any of the things where it, like there was one video in particular where Watson got, someone went for like one of the $200 questions, which is the lowest level, right?
Right.
And Watson got it right. And then Watson went immediately for the $1,000 or $2,000, whatever the top level question is now.
On that board, it's $1,000.
Okay. So he went right for the, like, and the category had been untouched. So all of the versions were available. Every single variation of however much, I can't even remember how they go anymore because I haven't watched in so long.
The first round of Jeopardy is $200, $400, $600, $800, and $1,000 questions for each category.
Right, right.
And then it doubles $400,
$800. Man, I remember when it was $100, $200, $300, $400,
$500. I know.
Oh, my God.
Those were the days.
We're old.
I think there are people who remember when it was $25, $50,
$75. Yeah. Rice-a-ronis, San Francisco treat. I'm sorry, I lost on Jeopardy by Weird Al Yankovic.
I remember that too.
Yeah, I also I remember when that came out. Weird Al in 3D.
I think this is going to be a fun experience. Well, I'm sure it's been fun for the people who've been working on it, and extremely challenging. I'm interested to see how it turns out and whether or not IBM will be up for a rematch. Depending on how it goes, will they be able to improve it enough, and will they convince the Jeopardy producers to let them back on? But I think it's going to be fun. It'll be fun to watch.
Yeah, even if it loses, it's such a phenomenal achievement to create the algorithms and the database necessary to be able to navigate natural language. I mean, that really is... I did not expect to see it this early.
No.
You know, I thought that might be a 2020 thing, not a 2011 thing.
It's extremely difficult to do, as you can, the aforementioned librarians will tell you,
getting
catalogs to process natural language questions.
Mm-hmm. English majors will tell you that the language is very difficult as well. And, you know, so my hat is off to IBM and those engineers and employees who all work together to bring this technology to life, because even the applications they were talking about, that's just the beginning.
Yeah, you can do a lot with it.
You know, we had talked about the semantic web before. This is really kind of what the semantic web is promising, is this web experience. Now, granted, again, Watson's not a web-based experience, but a web experience where it can understand what you're saying and give you the right response.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I know what you mean. You're looking for this.
Right. Yeah. Like, and I mean, it's amazing. You could think in a few years you could have a computer that can understand a joke.
Mm-hmm.
Supposedly, it made a joke.
What?
Yeah. In one of the preliminary games, supposedly it said something that caused the entire audience to laugh, and I think it was Fox News that was reporting it, and they did not go into detail about what this thing was, but they said that it was at the end of one of the, like, Watson got something right and then said something that made people laugh.
Okay.
Now, whether or not it was a joke in the sense that the computer somehow manifested this desire to make a joke, I don't know, because clearly we're not talking about something that's actually alive.
If answer is correct, and next question has not been asked, say
be
this.
Be snarky. Yeah.
It seems to work for other people on that show.
Follow that logic.
So, and I'm also looking forward to the segment before the second round begins where they start asking you about your background.
Right.
Well, Alex, I was born 4 years ago.
Right.
Well, I don't know if you could say born.
Right.
And I like computing, reading, and long walks on the beach.
But yeah, the other side of this that we haven't really touched on, and I think this is a good place to wrap up,
is it
really shows you how remarkable human beings are.
Yeah, it sure does.
Because look at what has to happen in order for a machine to compete against humans. You have to have 2,880 cores, processors. You have to have 15 terabytes of RAM. You have to have this computer that has the equivalent of 2 million books worth of information stored on it in order to compete with humans.
And in order to even come close
Right.
To, I mean, even if it doesn't win.
So that's really kind of a testament to how amazing people are, not just how amazing the technology is.
And I also think it's nice that IBM found a way to do this experiment in a way that will actually make people interested
right.
in it, build some interest in it. And I'm glad that Sony Entertainment has found a way to use this to their advantage too, to show off how cool they are.
Yeah.
Essentially, give IBM an opportunity to play.
It's definitely a nice event to see. I mean, the fact that it's going to promote this idea of the semantic mm-hmm. computing and artificial intelligence in a way that is both entertaining and really informative. It was clever. It's a very clever approach.
Yeah, definitely.
So kudos, IBM.
Yes.
Kudos, Jeopardy. And with that, we're going to wrap this up. If you have any suggestions for topics or you want to chime in on our discussion about Watson, you can let us know on Twitter or Facebook. Our handle there is TechStuffHSW, or you can write us an email, and that address is TechStuff@HowStuffWorks.com. And Chris and I will talk to you again really soon. Boop, boop, boop.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com. To learn more about the podcast, click on the podcast icon in the upper right corner of our homepage. The HowStuffWorks iPhone app has arrived. Download it today on iTunes. Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Running a business is no cakewalk, but with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is experience. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.